Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. Victory to God, victory to the light. God bless you. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. So lovely having this time with you. Last weekend we were at Loon Lake Retreat. My only regret is that not everybody could be there. And each time it comes as a revelation to me as to what the topic is going to be. And this last time was on Papa Ram Dass. What a wonderful meditation to have on this great master. Mataji sometimes would warn the devotees there because Papa could be full of fun, wonderful stories, have so many things to say, and entertain in a way, and yet she would warn them he was infinite spirit and not to mistaken his body for who he was in God. And sometimes people would come to the ashram and they would have their complaints. And Papa would quote something that Ramakrishna would say. And he says, what? Are we supposed to have horns on our head? Are we supposed to, in other words, is there supposed to be some extraordinary outside signs? How do you know? How do you recognize such a one? When Mother met Papa, it was here in Seattle, Washington. God came all the way around the world twice, once in the form of Paramahansa Yogananda, once in the form of Swami Ram Dass, all the way to Seattle, in order to see Mother. And when she first approached the room that he was staying at the Mini Hotel in the University District, she saw that the door was slightly ajar, and she looked in, and Papa looked out at her, and he started to dance around in ecstasy. And she'd never seen such a thing before. And then she brought these beautiful dozen roses that she had paid a lot of money for. And he took a look at them and just kind of tossed them down on the table there. And that surprised her because Master always made sure that flowers were put into a vase and nicely arranged that were brought for him. But she realized later at the ashram that he was given flowers all through the day. And Papa would say, the garlands sometimes had ants in them, so he learned to take them off very quickly. Or the ants would get on him and bite him. And he had that kind of nature. Sometimes, reading about these great spiritual masters, we think of them as not really being human. That they are divine, that they're beyond absolutely everything. But what we learn by reading about and meeting different saints and realized masters, they come in absolutely every stripe, every kind, that there is no formula that you can apply to any one spiritual master. Some of them sit in deepened ecstasy, and their fingernails grow, their hair grows, but other than that, there's absolutely no sign of life in them, except that they are immersed in universal life. But all the outward signs are as almost as someone who is dead. And then there are others who are very active, very engaged with the world. They can be funny, they can be everything that a human being can be. And yet they are equally filled with God, because once you attain that highest state, you are immersed in that state. It is called Sahaja Samadhi, or Brahma Nirvana, as Master called it. You go beyond even Nirvikalpa Samadhi. You're established in that it requires no effort for you to be immersed in God. It doesn't make any difference what you're doing, whether you're walking or sitting. talking or being silent. God is always present with you. And this is something that is beyond our normal ability as a human being to really encompass, because we operate through the mind in a subject-object manner. I and thou. Papa had gone beyond that. He had immersed himself into God. Now, Swamiji told me that it was actually about 10 years after Papa had established the ashram that he finally overcame everything. And what Papa had a difficult time letting go of, he said anger was his greatest enemy on the spiritual path. And two men had come to the ashram intent on doing harm to both Papa and Mataji. And they had hurt Mataji. She had a bad back the rest of her life. Many days she had to spend time lying down on the floor because her back would go into spasms and would be in pain. And Papa had a hard time letting go of that one. Finally, one of the men came to the ashram. And he admitted, he says, "I was one of those two men who was here. And I'm sorry for what I did." And Papa was able then to completely let it go. And there is nothing then that bothered him in that sense or separated him from God. This is an exacting path that we follow. And we must hold ourselves to the highest standards, because that is what will take us all the way to God. And that's what Mother had when she met Papa. She was already in a state of nirvikalpa samadhi, a very high state of realization. But she was not yet established in that effortless state of oneness with God. There's times when she went in and into it and then came back out of it. And she knew that there is more for her to go through. And so she had prayed deeply to God, "Lord, either take me directly into that highest state, or send me someone," because Master had left the body, Rajasi was no longer available. And there is no one of the kind of realization that Mother needed. It's rare, actually, in the world to find somebody who, as Mother said, went over the top, meaning beyond all duality, beyond even Christ consciousness, where you might say, "I and my Father," because that's your experience. You still have a sense of I-ness. And you go completely over the top. You go through the mystical crucifixion. And as a result of that, you become established in this consciousness. And Mother knew that she had not become that. So she prayed to God, "Either take me into that experience directly yourself, or send me somebody who can help me into that highest and final state." And God said to her that, "I shall come to see you face to face so that your joy may be complete." He made that promise a few months before Papa came. And then when Papa came, he was telling Mother that the group there, that the meditation group, they must all be very happy. And Mother said very humbly, "How could we not be when God has come to see us?" And Papa replied, "It is God who has come to see God face to face." And she just had her hair stood up on end, because she felt it was absolute confirmation that this is who God sent to her. And she had conflicting feelings about it, because she had such tremendous love and loyalty for her master. Was she betraying him? It's something that she felt inside of her, even though Master had written, "When you go to India and elsewhere, be sure to visit saints, because they are an uplifting, wonderful influence, and they can help you greatly in your sadhana." But Mother was feeling this way, and so she felt that God had confirmed, when Papa said that, that it was God himself who had sent Papa, who had come as Papa. And so she and her husband, Ralph, sold everything that they had and went to India. They even had their pictures in the newspaper at the time because it was an unusual thing to do, telling their story and why they were going. And Mother originally thought, I'll go to the ashram and I'll sit in meditation and I'll go into this highest state and become established. It would just happen like that. She had no idea the experiences that God had in mind for her. And if she had not had Papa, she would have been locked up in an institution because, as Mother said, it's almost as if you go through a psychotic break. You look very much like somebody who has schizophrenia because you're in this altered state. You're in this uplifted state. You're back and forth between the dual forces. You need that help at that time. You need that support, particularly as powerfully as Mother was going through it. And if she had been here, no one would have understood. They may have injected her with drugs, all kinds of things. So it was absolutely necessary that Papa be there and escort her through these experiences. But he didn't explain these experiences to anyone at the ashram. And when we first started going to the ashram, many were told or had been there at the time and thought that Mother had gone through some kind of physical and maybe mental illness while she was there. And it's an interesting thing, but it was Mother's story to tell. It was something that she was being taken through by God, and God would take her through a particular experience, and then he would take her to the Bible, and she would open up the Bible, and she would read there, and she would read exactly the description of what she had gone through. And God would say, see, this is the inner meaning of this story in the Bible, mostly all in the New Testament. And so through that, she got direct revelation, direct truth from God. And it's a tremendous thing. This has the capacity to change this world because everyone's been told of a fable of something that once happened, and you're to have faith in this, and through that faith you are to have salvation. But this is really not what Jesus came to teach. He did not mean to set himself up as the one and only, and that it was only through faith. He said, the kingdom of heaven is within you. He was having a conversation with a very spiritual man, and the man said that the highest and greatest commandment was to love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, mind, and soul, strength, and thy neighbor as thyself. And Jesus said a very interesting thing. He said, you are not far from the kingdom of heaven. Well, if you were to have a traditional view of things, what would that mean? That he was going to die very soon and be going to heaven? No, he was acknowledging that this man's purity of mind had recognized this great truth. And he felt the power of it. Jesus said he could feel the power of it in a child, in anyone at all. And he was always breaking the norms. You know, there's the man from Samaria that he told the story of. Well, Samaritans were very lowly thought of. They were thought to be very on the wrong side of the tracks, you might say. And he told this story to those who thought of themselves as the chosen people, a cut above, by virtue of their birth. So you see, he was challenging everything that they believed in. He was wanting them to rise up. The kingdom of heaven is within you. You are not far from the kingdom. And it begins to tell the story of an inner kingdom, a kingdom that you might realize, that you might come to know, even while you're here in the body. And so all Christianity will one day wake up to this fact that this is a universal truth. It's a wonderful vision. it's a wonderful thing that is going to happen. And that mother's words and her works will be a part of that. It's why God sent her. You know, sometimes these things take time to unfold. There have been writings, the Nag Hammadi text, for instance. It sat in a cave for nearly 2,000 years until they were discovered by a shepherd who was throwing some rocks idly into a cave while he was taking care of his sheep. And he heard a crack. And he went in there and he found these clay vases that were filled with these old texts. And in the beginning, they didn't recognize any value in it, and they were actually using it as fire starter, of all things. But then suddenly he got the idea that maybe they were valuable, and he took them into the town, and somebody recognized these are really amazing. And so we have a little more glimpse into those early Christian years based on some of these discoveries, and it took thousands of years for them to come forward. Imagine. So it's all in God's good timing. It's all in God's good timing. But I wanted to read to you a little bit about the conversations between Mother and Papa Ram Dass and Ralph Hamilton, Mother's husband. And Mother is starting here. The reason why I took up this question of insects is that in America, we are very conscious of insects because we have been warned against them. These insects cause the spread of bacteria and various diseases. These diseases hinder the progress of the individual in his efforts to attain God. So is it all right to do away with them completely? And so she's this whole issue of ahimsa, do no harm. Papa, Sri Ramakrishna Paramahansa used to sleep under a mosquito net, as there were plenty of mosquitoes in Calcutta, especially on the banks of the Ganges. Thus, he is able to prevent mosquito bites and could avoid killing them. Mother, Papa, this is wonderful. With whatever I feel about, you agree. Papa, there is authority for it. If we do not kill them, they will eat up our body. What kind of meditation can we have when mosquitoes and bugs are biting us? Here in the ashram, we kill the mosquitoes by spraying. Ralph, there are some people in India who do not kill any insects. This news spreads around to a lot of people in America. Can be heard talking that in India, nobody kills bugs or other insects, so they wonder how people live in India. Papa, some do kill. They say that their religion does not allow killing of any kind. But the fun of it is that though they abstain from killing bugs, they freely exploit people by taking heavy interest on loans and thus reduce them to a state of beggary. Wantonly, you should not kill. If you see any ant on your way, you need not or should not kill it. But when the ants come to trouble you persistently, you are justified in killing them. There are some people who are so cruel in their nature that they take delight in killing. That is not good. When you are harmed by insects, then it is permissible to kill them. Mother, what about snakes? Here there are many snakes, and if they are poisonous, they are killed. If we know that they are not venomous, we let them go. It is dangerous to allow venomous snakes to move about in the ashram, where there are many people, including children. It is better to dispatch them to the other world so that they may get a better birth next time. It is believed that those who die will never get better birth because of spiritual atmosphere. It is believed that those who die here will get a better birth because of the spiritual atmosphere. Better life means evolution to a higher life. One time I was sitting with Mother, where there were several of us who were sitting around her, and we were having conversation, and there was one particular devotee who was there, sitting right at the knee of Mother. She's very sensitive about the injury of any animal, including insects. And there was a little fly or mosquito or something that was flying around Mother, and she reached up with her hand and she grabbed it and smashed it. And when she did so, she looked down at this devotee, who was looking a little bit in shock and horror that Mother would do such a thing. And Mother said, "On to a higher life form." So she blessed the bug even as she was killing it and sending it on to a higher life form. Mother, if man is a higher creation, those who stand in the way of his progress should be disposed of. Papa, Ramdas read in the newspaper yesterday about a young boy who had around his body, neck and shoulders, very big snakes. Some of them were venomous. Strangely, it seems, they go to him. They do not harm him. The boy must have some power in that makes the snakes friendly with him. Ramdas had experience of a serpent winding around his leg and licking his toe. No harm was done to him. Ramdas saw Ram in it. When Ramdas looked down, the serpent was slowly unwinding itself and was going away. Ramdas called it back, but it did not come. It came on subsequent days and looked at Ramdas from a corner. It could not come near him, as there were many people with Ramdas. And I remember when I was at the ashram, and I had a desire to see a cobra, of all things. And one day I was walking up to the Arunachala block where I was staying, and there was this beautiful golden snake. It was probably 4 feet long. It was quite long. It was laying out on the asphalt there. And so I stopped and I pranamed, and he stared at me and I stared at him, and I had a lovely darshan of this snake. And after a while, he continued on his way, and there was a little grassy area with plants, and he went into that. And so I was telling Swami Satchidananda about this, and he said that was a cobra. I didn't know that cobras came in a golden color. It did have a hood, although it wasn't raised like that, but I could see that it did have a hood like a cobra. And it was beautiful, and we liked each other very much. There was another lady, Indian lady, devotee, staying there, and I told her the story because I was so thrilled. But at nighttime, she wouldn't come out of her room anymore because she was afraid that snake might be out there. So I had no idea. When I was going to most all full moons and around the full moons, I would go up to Manjapati, the hill behind the ashram. And at that time, there is no road going to the top of the ashram. There are no houses. There's just a police station with a tower at the top. And I would go up there and I would meditate through the night, and it was lovely being there. And one time I was headed up, and Jayant, who became a Swami later on, he was cleaning the ashram. And he said, "Where are you going?" And I said, "I'm going up to the top of the hill. It's pitch black." And he said, "There are snakes up there." And I said, "Well, Papa will have to protect me." And he just shook his head a little bit, and off I went. But later on, I saw a snake. There's one on top of the roof there. It's just about 6 inches long. You wouldn't know it from anything. It's one of the most poisonous, dangerous snakes in the world, and they handled it with a great deal of care. So you don't have to have this fear. And Papa had fear of snakes. He also had fear of ghosts before he started his sadhana days. This comes out in other places. And so when he saw this snake, he went into samadhi standing up. And he was in this cave all night long, and he looked down, and there wrapped around his leg was a cobra, and it was licking his big toe with its tongue. And he saw Ram in it and was absolutely unafraid. That was the kind of change that went through him as he was chanting God's name. He was also afraid of ghosts when he was younger. And so he heard during his sadhana days, and I think it's in Quest of God, that there was a ghost in a particular house or a place, and so he went directly to that place and spent the night there. He wanted to test himself. And so he did, and he just felt God's bliss all night long and was not bothered by any ghosts. So, you see, he was overcoming his fears at every corner. And this is the way that we should be. We should face our fears. Sometimes people get caught up in their fears. Now, fears may come up. It may be from something that happened in this lifetime, from another lifetime. But we shouldn't give in to it in the sense that we just let it run away. We may not be able to help that it comes up at a particular time. It just does, because it's deeply embedded in our unconscious mind. But we shouldn't just go with it, just shouldn't run with it. We should think to ourselves, God has brought this up so that I can resolve this fear and go beyond it. That's our purpose. And so we chant God's name, we meditate deeply on Him, we focus on the light. And through the grace of God, we rise up above this fear so that it never bothers us again. This is very important that we do so. If we come across a fear or a desire nature and we just give in to it, we just go with it, we are adding fuel to the fire. We are adding new life energy to whatever it is that's coming up inside of us. And we're going to pay a price for that. We can do it because we have free will. But we have to understand that everything has a consequence. And if we don't do things properly in our sadhana, there will be consequences. And we can even get into a point, and I've experienced it myself, where you are just feeling God, you're feeling His bliss, and you do something that you know isn't quite right, and you continue to feel His bliss, so maybe you think you get away with it. But you don't, because as you go further down that road, eventually it begins to sow a division between you and God. And you don't always realize it right away. So it's very important that we hold ourselves to these high standards. Now, temptations can come to you. And again, it's not always our doing. It's not because we want them. We don't want them. And yet, there they are. And it's our battle. It's our battle with the negative thief, the thief who's trying to take us away from God, and is trying to tempt us, is trying to dissuade us in any way that it can. Be clear in your own mind. This is your sadhana, and if you are going to take it seriously, you're going to have to do battle. There's no doubt about that. And so to embrace the battle, but embrace the battle with God. One thing that you can do that I've done so many times, I surround myself in my mind's eye with all the masters, and I present to them whatever difficulty that I'm having. And I tell them I want it to be a free and open book, and I say, you see what I'm dealing with here. Help me. Help me to overcome this. Give me the strength, give me the light, give me the purity, so that this no longer bothers me. And I keep at it until I get the response that I'm looking for, that it truly no longer has a hold on me. And then after that, it's very important not to play with the idea, not to just bring it out and toy around with it, because it'll grab hold of you again. And so you put it away and you keep it away, and you see yourself, and you begin to form a vision of yourself as being not that. Who are you when you are completely free? Who are you when you're in the total light, when you're in total God consciousness? Sometimes we're always fighting things, and we forget who we really are, and we actually end up giving power to the very things that we don't want in our lives. So we turn that around. We focus on, who am I in truth and reality? Whether you've completely realized it in the moment or not, let your mind reach out for that. See yourself. And sometimes you can, maybe so to speak, borrow the strength and the light from others. You see yourself as mother. You see yourself as papa. You see yourself as master. Sri Yukteswar, Lahari Mahashay, Babaji, Jesus, any of the great masters. You see yourself, what would they do if they were operating in me? How would they handle this? What would they think? And then suddenly you feel the power of that master. You feel the clarity of their vision. And you rise above that thing that has been bothering you. Don't just settle. Don't just say, well, I guess I got this fear. I guess I've got this desire nature. It just never seems to go away. Don't settle with that. Because you're actually reinforcing the image of yourself as being that one. If you struggle with being tired or other kinds of things when you're really should be meditating, don't just think, oh, well, I'm tired and that's it. Master one time, he did service all day long. They fed a large number of people. And then he went home and he thought, oh, I'm just so dead on my feet. All I want to do is lay down and go to sleep. And then he took himself in hand and he said, no, that's not the way I should be. I should meditate first. And so he sat in meditation, and because he dedicated himself so sincerely, so much like that, he spent the entire night wrapped in bliss of God. And tiredness fled away. Where did the tiredness go? Why do we give these things carte blanche as if they are the sole reality? They are just an overlay of who and what you truly are. That is why the path of the bhakta is one that is so tremendous, because you put your mind on God. Dhyana oftentimes is just trying to cut things away. I'm not this, I am not that. Now, Ramana Maharshi was different than that. He was Dhyana. But he wasn't just trying to cut things away. He would do it by asking the question, who am I? Who am I? And then he would go deep inside of himself. And he'd say, am I this body? And what if this body died? Let me lay down here and just, or lie down here and just pretend that I'm dead. Now, what do I experience? I still exist. Who is the I in here? Who is it who's saying it still exists? And he was of such a highly developed nature, just simply doing that. He connected with his true self, his God self. He went beyond the body because he is suffering a tremendous fear of death for some. He didn't even know why. His father had passed away. Maybe that helped trigger it. But he's just shaking inside. He was just so afraid of dying. And through this experience, he realized there is no death. And I've had that experience. I've had it where I was lifted up. And then I saw that who I was not born. I was born into a body. But there was an I who was born into the body that was more than the body, pre-existent. And as I looked forward, so to speak, in this vision, I could see that I would exist after this body was gone. That I was not this body. And it begins to speak to your mind. It begins to integrate itself into your mind. You begin to understand, I am of eternal nature. Now we can say these words. We can repeat these prayers. But there's a vast difference between thinking to yourself in your mind, oh, I think that that's true, and coming into that state of realization. When you have true realization, it resonates through every cell of your being. As Mother would say, I know and I know that I know. And that's a huge difference, and it's an important one. So we want to have that experience. We want to go beyond, but it doesn't always just come in a day, you know. Mother went through these experiences. As I said, she was in such a state of high realization when she went to India, when she went to see Papa. But she had another about 13 years to go through of experiences after she left the ashram. She counted it 16 years from 1954. So it was about 1970 that she finally went over the top when she had her full and complete God realization. And Master one time said, out of all the saints that he wrote about in the autobiography of a yogi, that the ones who had full realization, of course Babaji did, without any doubt, Sri Yukteswar did, Pranabananda, Swami Pranabananda did, and those were the ones that he named, and there are as many prominent ones who had not gone completely the whole way. And you think, my goodness, some of these are known all over the world. And yet, they were not fully God realized. Now, when we're standing on sea level, and we're looking up at some mountains, and we see the mountain K2, and we see the mountain Everest, we think, oh, those are very, very high mountains, and indeed they are. But if you are Everest, and you're looking over at K2, you say, well, you're high, but you're not all the way there yet. So, a fully realized master can say that. Most of the rest of us, we just get down on our knees and pranam and bow down to these great saints because they truly are. But Mother would give us that discrimination. She said, and this is why they weren't fully realized. And it was a lesson to us, you see. It wasn't to deride or put down anyone at all. It was to inform us. This is what it takes to go the whole way, and if you don't get the full experience, this is why. So it's very, very important, and what a tremendous primer that is. Because it orients our mind, and we get it, on some level at least, that we have to go the whole way, and to settle for nothing less than that. Mother speaking here, I was thrilled to read your experience during your travels in the Himalayas where you were entering big caves and shouting Hari Om to see if there is any wild animals in them. Papa, Ram Dass had no fear at all. He wanted to see some wild animals face to face but could only see them at a distance. Ram Dass saw Ram in them and loved them. Where there is love, there is no fear. Isn't that a wonderful statement? Where there is love, there is no fear. Fear is mostly, and this is from Ralph, fear is mostly imaginary and unnecessary. It causes a tremendous amount of trouble, agony, and worry all through the world. Papa, when you feel there is something other than yourself, there is fear. When there is nothing other than yourself, whom are you to be afraid of? Mother, there are only a few who have attained this high stage. Papa, only for such people is there no fear. All others there is fear. Even in the case of those who have realized that there is nothing other than themselves, a sort of fear seems to persist. That is only a nervous reaction. Somehow they are perturbed when they see something fearful or dangerous. A little later they are surprised and wonder why and whom they are afraid of, when everywhere there is none other than themselves or God. And this is important to realize as well, that as you rise up in the ladder of realization, you can get startled by something. You can have an initial reaction to something that happens in the body. And the body has a natural tendency to want to protect itself. Now sometimes you may not have any reaction at all, and then other times you do. And it's simply the body, and it passes through you, and then it's gone. And so you can have that. Grief is like that as well. You know that there is no end to a life, even when the body ends. And yet you might feel some sadness and grief when somebody passes away. that you might say it's just simply on the surface. You feel it, and you feel it, you can feel it deeply. But it just passes across like clouds passing overhead. And then they're gone. Because they have no purchase, they have nothing to get a hold on you. Because you have no attachment to it, and you realize the truth. And so you may have some fear, you may have some sadness, you may have any of the human emotions. But they don't cling to you, they don't stick to you. I saw a mother talk very honestly one time that she had a reaction to somebody. This individual, mother had realized that they had strangled her in another lifetime. And when they approached her and she went to give them a hug and all the love of God, she would have this shudder that go through her body. Because he would see his arms outstretched and his hands coming towards her, and there was a part in her body that remembered getting strangled in another lifetime. And she would just have this reaction, and yet she never treated him any differently. And she gave him all the love of God inside of her. So you see, even a fully realized being might have certain aspects of that. Sometimes, Papa, if somebody was late in coming or some other difficulty, he'd stand there and he'd pace back and forth and back and forth, and he would be praying for them and hoping that they were all right. One time, Master was in a house and he was on a trip with Dr. and Mrs. Lewis. And I don't think he was on a trip with them. He was someplace else. They were on a trip, and they were by the ocean side. And Dr. Lewis had gone out on a small sailboat with one or two others. And a big storm suddenly came up, and they were really getting tossed about. And there was some danger that they might get capsized, and if that happened, they were in real trouble. And so they went through this, and while they were going through this experience, Master was in a distant place, and he was pacing back and forth, back and forth, and he was heard to say, "Doctor is in trouble, doctor is in trouble." And so finally it came out all right, and they weren't capsized, they survived the storm all right, and they got back onto shore. And when he got home, Master gave him a call. And he said, "Well, doctor, you almost got wet, didn't you?" And then Dr. Lewis knew that Master had been with them as he had been praying to Master. One time, Dr. Lewis was driving on the way to meditation service, and they hit a patch of ice on a bridge, and he was skidding out of control, and there was danger that they could flip right over and go over the bridge, and they would probably be dead. And he called out to Master, as did other people in the car, and they said it felt like a huge giant's hand reached down and took the car that was skidding out of control and headed for the guardrail. And it just brought it about right. And they didn't hit anything, and they came out all right. And they knew that it was Master who had helped them. Isn't that wonderful? So we cast aside all fear as well. There's no room for fear. You may have a startle reaction if there is a loud noise suddenly and you're deeply meditating. It may startle your body. You may see something and it just causes your breath to come in. That's just the body reacting. Ramana Maharshi went through many illnesses in his body. You look at him, and when he's walking over, he's bent over at the waist. He can not stand up straight. He had some form of arthritis and other kinds of difficulties. And sometimes at night, he was heard to be moaning. Well, he's supposed to be a fully God-realized being. Why is he moaning? So somebody asked him. And he said, "Oh, it's just the body." You know? Sometimes the body just needs to express itself like that. It's in pain. It's having difficulty. And yet there's a part of you, and what Ramana Maharshi might say, he would ask himself, who is it who's having the pain? You see, and by doing this, suddenly you look for that person who's beyond the pain, who's experiencing a body that's having pain. and you separate yourself, you dissociate yourself a bit from whoever that, whatever that pain is. So you become the observer. And then you realize, I'm more than this pain. Now, pain's a tough one. Pain can really grab hold of you, just as emotional states can. But we are told to be masters of ourselves. And that's what it means. It means to identify and know that you are one with God, no matter what goes on in your life. And everything in your life is a test to you to be sure that you don't identify solely with whatever that experience is. You still have the experience, but deep inside, you know that you are eternally connected and one with God. When I went into Loon Lake, or excuse me, not Loon Lake, but Cloud Mountain for the Year of Silence, and when I came out, I felt something be established inside of me, that before I would go in and out of that inner stillness. But when I came out of that time of seclusion, I felt an inner stillness in my heart center, and it was stable. It was always with me. And this is what we're looking for. We're looking to get stable in that God consciousness. So Papa is talking here, only for such people there is no fear. For all others there is fear, even in the case of those who have realized that there is nothing other than themselves. A sort of fear seems to persist. That is only a nervous reaction. Somehow they are perturbed when they see something fearful or dangerous. A little later they are surprised and wonder why and whom they are afraid of, when everywhere there is none other than themselves or God. Still, why should this body react like this? This fear is only a reaction of the nerves, not of the heart or mind. You see that? Of the nerves, of the body, not of the heart or the mind. Some people who have conquered that also are absolutely fearless. Ralph, some are afraid because they imagine so many things. Papa, when fear is in the mind, the person is weak. Ram Dass, in his old life, that is, before God took him up, was afraid of snakes. But later, when the serpent wound round his leg, he was in divine ecstasy. He was not at all afraid. On the other hand, he was happy when the snakes were there. Ram Dass extolled it to the skies, for it is love for him. Many people who have asked Ram Dass why God created wild beasts, snakes, and other insects. Ram Dass answered to them, if the wild animals and insects could speak, they would ask what business God had in creating man, who kills them. That's an interesting thing. When I was at the ashram, there was some mosquitoes that were there, and they were kind of big, fat, lazy mosquitoes. And I didn't have it in my mind to kill anything while it's there. So I just swipe my hand over my skin and they would fly away. And I thought, it's an interesting thing, isn't it? Here's these kind of big, fat, lazy mosquitoes that easily are encouraged to move on. But we kill those. And the ones that survive are the quick, fierce ones. And so we only end up with quick, fierce ones, and we don't have these other ones anymore. So in a way, many times, we end up creating our own worst enemies. Papa, we cannot practice. Mother, what about mosquitoes? And Papa, we cannot practice ahimsa to its extreme. Now see, he's different than Mahatma Gandhi, who he thought so highly of. Mahatma Gandhi was a votary of ahimsa. Once in his ashram, Sabarmati, a serpent, came inside and was killed by a sannyasi who belonged to the Arya Samaj, but that was with Gandhiji then. When Gandhiji came to know of the incident, he asked the sannyasi why he had killed the serpent when the rule in the ashram was to practice ahimsa. The sannyasi replied that the serpent was venomous, and if left free, would bite the ashramites. But Gandhiji held to his own opinion that killing the serpent was a mistake, and that the sannyasi ought to have refrained, and that such persons had no place in his ashram. He's tough, huh? Soon after, the sannyasi left the ashram. Some years later, Mahatma Gandhi started his campaign, and the British government arrested him and put him in jail. Then he developed appendicitis and had to undergo an operation. One day after the operation, this sannyasi went to see him at the hospital and asked Gandhiji, "What is it that you have done? By getting operated, you have allowed many bacilli to be killed and destroyed. Why did you permit it?" He thus got an occasion to corner the Mahatmaji. Do you know what reply Gandhiji gave? That he was afraid of death. "You'll find it is easy to preach, but most difficult to practice. Nonviolence is not nonviolence in all conditions. We should not deliberately harm anybody. Some people rejoice at the suffering of others. That should not be our nature. Suppose there are people or animals who are in distress. Let us help them. Let us love them. But if you see serpents going inside houses and biting people, then you should send the serpents away, not outside merely, but to the other world. Otherwise, the serpent will send you all the way to the other world, if there is any other world." Isn't Papa delightful? And very true, very true. We have to make sure that the things that we say are true. There were things that Master said and that Papa said that Mother didn't agree with. And so, this is the way that it is with masters. Your master tells you the truth as God prompts them to tell them. Now, Mother would say, "Don't compare notes, because I tell one person one thing and I'll tell somebody else another thing." And so not everybody gets the same message because each one is tailored to that individual. So sometimes we might feel bad or we might feel superior because the master tells us something or because they do something for somebody else that they don't do for us. And this is not the way that it should be. We should accept that whatever the way the Master comes is perfect for us. With me and Mother, for so many years, Mother treated me in a very impersonal kind of way. And others she brought in, and they were on friendly terms and did things together socially. But for me, I always felt that that was perfect. Because I knew why I was with Mother. It was for God realization. It wasn't for social status or doing things that way. I wanted my full realization from Mother. And however Mother saw fit to help me do that, I was fine with that. And so we accept the way that God gives to us and gives to us through the Master. And sometimes we're disappointed. And it's exactly right because it goes right to an attachment that we have. One time, it was Christmas, and I was at the ashram, and I had, weeks before, bought a gift for the ashram. It was a tape recorder. Theirs had broken. So I found the best one that I could, and I bought it, and I brought it and hid it underneath my bed. And every night I was going in to see Swamiji, and I had thought to present it, and I had wrapped it and had a bow on it, and it was all very nice. And I got there, and for the first times, I was barred from going into his office, and it was said that they were having a board meeting. And a minute later, Swamiji came out, and very kind of him, and told me that he was sorry that they were having this board meeting, and we wouldn't be able to have darshan that night. So, all right. But I wanted to give him the gift because it was Mother's birthday and it was Christmas. They don't celebrate it there, either one. So I gave it to him, and he looked at it and just nodded his head and set it down, walked back in. And it was a letdown to me at the time, because I suppose I had imagined that he would show some pleasure over it and it would be useful for the ashram and all of that. So it went right into my ego right there. Perfect for me. And it was disappointing, but I realized that at the time, this is exactly right for me. Because I could feel my disappointment. Why should I have disappointment? I had fulfilled my desire for God and Guru by buying that gift and presenting it. Case closed. Whatever effect that had, whoever liked it, didn't like it, whether they ever used it again, whether Swamiji, as oftentimes happened, turned around and gave it to somebody else, none of my business. I was only there to fulfill God's will. And it's wonderfully freeing when we feel that way. When I don't know all the reasons why I always do the things that I do. And sometimes I know that somebody has an expectation of me and I don't fulfill it. I know that. I can feel it in them. And I can feel God directing me, absolutely not do that, do this other thing. And that's the way that it is. And God has designed it so that that individual will receive the highest good as long as they're sincere. And it may even hurt them. But if it's God's will, that's exactly what I do. This is the key to freedom. To act exactly not as your ego, but as God inside of you directs you to do. And when it is God who is directing you, He will free you from all obstacles, from all the things. And you, all of us, can rise up into that same state of Sahaja Samadhi that Papa enjoyed. So it's wonderful to meditate upon a master. It's wonderful to meditate upon Papa's life. And in particular, we focused on Mother's view of Papa when we were at the retreat. And also what we got with that as a bonus. And what I came away with was a deepened appreciation for how greatly Mother wanted God, loved God, was willing to do anything to get her God realization. And how deeply that was embedded in her. That's what I came away with, really. It's a deepened appreciation for that. It's very interesting, the things that I've learned with Mother down through the years, and I'll get it on one level. And it can be a profound teaching at the time. And then sometime later, it'll come back around and I'll get it even on a deeper level. And it just keeps getting deeper and more profound with Papa, with Master, with Mother. What a wonderful, wonderful privilege we have to be traveling this path and to rise up even as Papa rose up, to have that purity of mind, heart, soul, to love God more than the world or anything else, so that we might be drawn directly to God and He to us, that we might merge our little selves into His Supreme Being. Isn't that wonderful? What a tremendous potential we hold inside of us. So let us emulate Papa in all ways. Let us emulate Mother and Master. And go directly to the goal. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. Victory to God. Victory to the light. Pranams to you.